Good afternoon, everyone. I want to welcome you to our LandoSky Weekly COVID-19 Response Call. We took a break last week for the 4th of July holiday, so hope everyone had a wonderful 4th of July, and you're staying safe and well, and having a wonderful start to July. Just a few housekeeping matters before we begin the call. This call is being recorded. We're trying to post the recordings from these calls on the LandoSky website. You can go to our homepage at landosky.org and click the COVID-19 section, and we have all types of resources to help our local governments and businesses respond to this economic and health crisis that we're currently going through caused by COVID-19. Everyone on the call will be muted. So if you speak, we have to unmute you from our end. So the simplest way of you joining from your computer, if you have any questions, you can enter those into the chat box. And so we encourage you to do that. If you're unable to do that, you can text me at my cell phone number, which is 828-768-3216. That's 828-768-3216 if you have any questions. Today's agenda, I thought since the General Assembly has completed a session last week, I know they were in session yesterday, but just wanted to give an update on what's happened at the state level, certainly with that. So we should be having a few of our local legislators joining us. Several of them are on the road, so they'll have to join us via phone, but we hope to hear from them and to hear their thoughts. But we'll start out the call with Drew Christie with the governor's office. Drew is the Western representative for Governor Cooper, and we appreciate everything that he does to keep us informed and to support our region. Drew is wonderful to work with, and if anything you need assistance, certainly through the governor's office, Drew's always open and willing to try to help out. So we're really grateful for all the support from and hard work on our behalf by Drew. Then we'll after Drew, we'll hear an update from Chris Wall with EQV Strategic. Chris will give us the latest at the federal level, and also give us update at the state level before we turn it over to some of our legislators. So some of our legislators did indicate they had a conflict, they couldn't join us today, but we'll try to include them on a future call. So now I'll turn it over to Drew Christie with Governor Cooper's office. Drew, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Nathan, for having me, and thank you, LandoSky Regional Council, for hosting these meetings. I know they've been very informative for me, and so I hope they've been informative to everybody else. So to start off with, today at 2 o'clock, Governor Cooper will be holding a press conference to give an update on COVID-19. You can go to your local PBS channel to view that, or you could find it online through the Department of Health and Human Services website or Department of Emergency Management website as well. So as of today, there have been 79,340 confirmed cases of COVID-19 with 1,034 people currently hospitalized due to COVID-19, and there were 99 admissions in the last 24 hours. So that's something that's a little concerning to us. And then also there have been, sadly, 1,461 people have died due to COVID. So those are some factors that we're looking at, and DHHS is looking at to see how we can move forward in the future. The next thing, and I'm going to make this short and sweet here today. I don't have much to talk about. I think everybody's still coming back from holiday weekend, so we're trying to get back in the swing of things ourselves. But the unemployment numbers, I'll talk about that. As of yesterday, in total, there were 1.85 million claims filed with on July 8th, there were 11,528 claims filed yesterday. And so that, and the total payments have been $5.3 billion paid out over those, what was it, 4 months? So we're making progress. I know the claims are still coming in. If I remember right, I think the $600 a month payment from the federal government runs out at the end of this month. So that's something that folks on unemployment need to make sure that they're aware of, that that's going to be happening. And so that's about all I have. Sorry, yes. Thank you, Daniel. Yes, I misspoke. It's $600 a week. Thank you for that. So that's all I have. If you have any questions, feel free to put them in the chat box. I'll try and answer them best I can. Thank you, Nathan.
Thank you so much, Drew. And you mentioned the number of hospitalizations. I think from the governor's office and Secretary Cohen, you know, certainly we're having more positive testing, test results because of there's been increased testing. But it sounds like the positivity rate is increasing somewhat, and the number of hospitalizations is increasing. I know locally, it's my understanding that our local hospitals are experiencing the highest number of COVID patients they've had since this outbreak. Could you provide a little clarification on that?
Yeah, we did have a slight increase in the total positive or percent positive cases. It appears that we're starting to level off. We're at right about 9%, and we've stayed at 9% over the past 6 days. So that's starting to level off. So that's a very good indicator there. But yes, the hospitalizations and ICU beds that are being taken up are concerning. There are currently 79% of all hospital beds in use. 78% of all ICU beds are in use, and 26% of all the ventilators are in use. So that's one factor we're worried about. We don't want to put a strain on our hospitals and our hospital workers for this. So we want to make sure that our numbers are going in the right direction. And so those numbers are increasing, and we are worried about that. But I'm sure Secretary Cohen in today's briefing will be speaking to that and going over her wonderful slides that she always has that are so full of knowledge and information.
Well, thank you so much, Drew. And the $600 enhanced benefit does end, I think, the week ending July 25th. There is North Carolina currently, you're entitled to 12 weeks of unemployment at the state level. There is a federal extension. You have to file separately to request an additional 13 weeks of unemployment. So maybe on a future call, we'll try to have a representative from the Division of Employment Security to give us an update, because we expect there'll be a lot of interest in that as there's some transitions with those unemployment programs. It's very relevant for our area. Historically, we were almost over 5 years, over 60 months. Our region had the lowest unemployment rate in North Carolina, but currently we have the highest unemployment rate in North Carolina. So we know many people are depending on that, and it's a critical part to help us withstand this these challenging times we're in. Now I'd like to turn it over to Chris Wall with EQV Strategic. I don't know if I'd say that, Chris, but
that was correct.
Chris represents the North Carolina Association of Regional councils of government, and Chris can give us the latest from the federal and state level. So Chris, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, Nathan, always happy to be a part of the call, and I'm having to do the call from outside, so forgive me if I've got a little background or wind noise. Just let me know if I need to repeat myself on anything. But as usual, we'll start with the federal government. The Senate is, United States Senate, where all the action is right now, is out this week and next for the holiday break. Senator McConnell announced end of last week, right before they recess, that he intends to introduce a COVID Part 4 package when they get back from break, which is good news. I think we've talked about that a couple of times on the call before. Still a lot of uncertainty surrounding that because of some of the lines in the sand that have been drawn by each side on what they expect to have in, but looks like the Senate will turn to the COVID Part 4 package, and then most likely that will take us up to the August recess. And that's when the negotiations will start with the House to reconcile the two bills. I still predict that we will have another COVID package, relief package from the federal government. However, I still think that it will be, probably mid-September, 1st of October, before we see a package that will actually go to the president. So once again, the General Assembly has been asking the federal government for some leniency as it relates to the original CARES funding on how they can spend that. I anticipate that will be included in the federal package that comes, but I just don't think it's coming quite as fast as the General Assembly would prefer. Turning to the General Assembly, as you mentioned, they were in yesterday. They had a few veto override votes, which none succeeded. So the status quo stays in place as far as the governor's orders on businesses on phase two. So anything that was, that's where we've been for the last couple of weeks, and the General Assembly was unable to change any of his executive orders. The General Assembly, as you mentioned, wrapped up. Let me back up. They handled the majority of their legislative session. They finished 2 weeks ago. They came back in yesterday briefly to vote on some override bills, and then they're scheduled to come back in September 1st to handle any additional legislation that they may need. Mostly that's to address the COVID pandemic, anything that needs to be changed, and potentially appropriate any new federal funding or additional CARES funding that the state currently has. I think, we mentioned on the last call, House Bill 1023 was really the most important thing to local governments. The House and Senate did agree to spend an additional $100 million from the CARES funding that they had. So there were some increase to some pots that were already passed through the first round, and then they put some new money into some programs. Again, one of the biggest ones that we were watching was the new jobs incentive grant, where there's up to a $250,000 grant for businesses that had not received any COVID-related assistance at this point. So with this, we're going to go on almost a month and a half break, and I expect things to mostly be quiet in Raleigh between now and then. We'll see what happens when they come back in September, because again, I don't think the federal government will have acted by then, but you can never, I never bet on what the federal government's going to do after doing this for a long time. So like Drew, I'm fairly short and sweet today. Happy to answer any questions or talk about anything that I have talked about or did not talk about.
Thank you so much, Chris. You mentioned the job incentive grant, and maybe some of our state legislators can provide some additional details as well. My understanding, that will be administered by the North Carolina Department of Commerce, and maybe I've missed it, but have you seen any guidance on how that's going to be administered by Commerce as of yet? Chris, can you hear me?
There we go. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. We can hear you.
Sorry. Okay. Yeah. So it is going to run through the Department of Commerce. The Economic Investment Committee will be the final arbiter of the grants. That is the committee that handles economic incentive grants for the state. So JDIG, One Grant, those type of programs. I did speak to the staffers that are working on the application. They have not finalized the application yet. They're currently working on it, and then their legal team will have to approve it. It will be an electronic portal that you will access through the Department of Commerce website, but it will be by invitation. So you will initially reach out, and then they will send you a link to apply for the grant. All applications are due by September 1st of this year. But no guidance. Guidance should be coming out in the next 2 weeks.
Is there any threshold for the number of employees a business would have to have to qualify? I know that it only applies to businesses that receive assistance through PPP or EIDL or other funding sources. But is there a threshold, like you have to have 5 employees or anything like that?
There are no employee thresholds. The 3 main categories is you cannot have received assistance beforehand. You have to have maintained at least 90% of your workforce from from April 1st to May 31st compared to that same time in 2019. And you had to have at least a 10% reduction in revenue for the same time period compared to 2019.
And Chris, I think we have Dan Gerlach on our call. Dan was the former director of the Golden Leaf Foundation, and I'll turn it over to him. He may have some additional things to add. But on the state local government part, are you seeing at the federal level, do you think, what type of package, and I know you're guessing now, and it's sort of like going to Vegas, but what do you see them doing other than providing additional flexibility with the funding North Carolina already received? I think North Carolina received about $3.5 billion through the CARES Act earlier. But do you think there'll be additional money in that thrown into that pot, and also on transportation? And I know the president's mentioned infrastructure bill. Some others have talked about it. We know North Carolina DOT is hemorrhaging cash and is, you know, sort of in a dire financial position.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's going to happen is you're going to see the federal government grant states more flexibility for the CARES funding that they have in reserve. And then they're going to put a new, they're going to appropriate new monies to inject cash into the economy. I think it's naive to think that they won't have money in for local government, but just based on what Senator McConnell has said, he wants to focus this next package on jobs reopening and injecting money into the economy to get it going. And, you know, the jobs report has been fairly solid the last 2 months. So that's a positive sign for the economy. But as Drew mentioned, right, there's still so much on unemployment and a lot of folks that are still suffering and some of the impacts we haven't even felt yet from the pandemic. So I think, you know, just based on what the Senate is saying, that's what's going to happen. But again, I think it's, cautiously optimistic that there will be additional funds for local governments in the next federal package.
Thank you so much, Chris, for joining us. I know you're awfully busy, got a lot going on, and you're very kind to share your time with us and your insight. So thank you for your advocacy on our behalf.
Thank you.
I'd like to now turn the call over briefly to Dan Gerlach. Dan is joining us. Dan was former director of the Golden Leaf Foundation, has served other statewide roles for us. And I think Dan may have some additional guidance on the guidance for small businesses and some other things. So, Dan, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me, Nathan?
Yes, sir. You have a wonderful background. I think that's a Jared Kay shot of the mountains here. And it appears my wife and you are in the same place because you have the same Zoom background.
Yeah, we do indeed. So thank you for that. And Robin has excellent taste in everything, apparently. So I would just say this. Thank you. I'm going to have my own consulting business now, Nathan. I'm working with some people in the West, but also working with Department of Commerce on the job retention program that Chris spoke about, just to add some color to that. We expect that we'll be developing the applications, and the applications, our goal is to have that ready by August 1st to get publicity out about the availability of it. It is available to businesses with employees, to 501c3 nonprofits, and to certain other nonprofits that may not have been eligible for Main Street program or the Rapid Recovery program or the PPP. So I expect to see some Western WNC applications there. The pot of the money is $15 million, but it is a limit on $15 million. In other words, if we get $30 million of eligible applications, everybody will get about half of what they asked for. Or if it's $60 million in applications that are eligible, we'll give you 25% of what you asked for. And it's not a competitive, if you meet the criteria, you'll get something. But how much you'll get will depend on how many applications we receive in by that hard deadline of September 1st. And I just want to add that look around, it's going to take a few weeks for us to get that up. That's all I had.
Dan, I think you mentioned they have to have employees. I know we've seen a lot of our local businesses that are sole proprietorships, especially some of them are more vulnerable businesses that actually they may not have employees, or maybe they have some contractors that work with them. And so far there haven't been a lot of things available to them. Have you thought about that, or do you have any ideas to help those individuals, those really small businesses, which we have a lot of those in Western North Carolina?
Thanks. Sorry, I muted myself again. I think it depends on the definition. I think as a business, of course, that may be eligible. The fact is that the bill requires you to look at full-time employees under the JDIG statute as a reference point, Nathan. So I think that's up for interpretation. As you may know, that there are several different implications here. So I think that's yet to be decided, but that's kind of my interpretation. But we're going to make sure that I am not a lawyer, nor do I practice one, nor am I giving you tax or legal advice. But I'm saying the guidelines will be out, and look for them by August 1st.
And I'll ask you one other question. We did get a chat question. Would nonprofits potentially be eligible for that, or is this only for-profit businesses?
It is for certain types of nonprofit businesses, Nathan. That would include charitable, social, anything that's – it uses the North Carolina definition, not the federal definition of nonprofits. So one of the definitions is for charitable, scientific, educational uses. If you're a 501c3 from the feds, generally you would be eligible. If you are a 501c7 or something that does, you're a nonprofit and pleasure and recreation and things like that, you would be eligible. If you have a cemetery association, you'll be eligible. But certain other nonprofits are not, and we'll have guidance on that. So the answer is yes and no. On the nonprofit question, but you would have to meet, as Chris said, that you would have to maintain at least 90% of your full-time employees, that you would have to have had revenue loss of at least 10% from March to May of 2020 compared to March to May of 2019.
I know many of our local chambers weren't eligible for PPP and some of the other federal benefits based on their nonprofit status, so I don't know if they would be eligible for this program or not. But as additional guidance is released, we'll try to share that and keep everyone updated. And Dan, thank you so much for sharing that with us. We have several legislators on the call. And so I know I see Senator Van Dyne, and in due respect to the Senate, we will allow her to go first. I know the House members on the call, they will, we always try to show due respect for the colleagues in the Senate. So one thing that is more divisive than the partisan divides in Raleigh are the bicameral division oftentimes. So Senator Van Dyne, certainly provide any update that you would like on the session y'all have just sort of completed. I know you're going to be probably going back to Raleigh, but let us know what things we should know about and what's on your priority list.
Well, Chris did an excellent job of covering what happened yesterday. I just want you to know, there is no joy around overriding these vetoes, or sustaining these vetoes, I should say. These are very, very difficult decisions, and I think particularly in light of the news since last Friday, or since we left, it made those votes very difficult. There was one bill that passed the House unanimously, so I should probably let, or pretty much unanimously, there might have been a stray no vote on it, that would have given school districts more flexibility around distance learning. And what I learned that I didn't know was that we have a significant number of parents. It varies from district to district, but it's around 25% to 30% that are really reticent to send their children to school. And we know that we need to get schools open. What that bill would have done is allowed distance learning to start at the same time as we're meant to open our schools. And it just didn't get a hearing in the Senate. And I'm disappointed about that. But you know, what can I say? Chris did a great job in terms of covering where we are, particularly around business. I was disappointed about the bill he talked about, because if you listen to the sponsor's intent, what they're trying to do is kind of set us up so that as the economy improves, we can draw more jobs. And I don't disagree with that strategy, but we were trying to get some additional funding for grants for our existing small businesses. I mean, you know what the situation is in Asheville. And we tried framing it around, could we just have a grant program to help these businesses get open, to, you know, the changes that they have to make to accommodate social distancing, the purchase of disinfectant and plastic shields and PPE, could we provide existing, particularly small businesses, for some with some support? And I think that resonated, but we just couldn't get that done. So, you know, I think we're gonna need some more help for schools to get them open. We allocated about $7 million. I've heard estimates that it'll take at least $25 to $30 million, just so schools can make the accommodations they need to get open. So there's still work to be done. And as you said, we're not due to come back until September 2nd. So, you know, I'm hoping maybe that can change. Maybe the federal government will give us more to work with. But right now we're kind of just in limbo. But I did want to mention, I do have a meeting with Pryor Gibson at 3:30, the Assistant Secretary in charge of unemployment. And if any of y'all have questions that you would like me to ask him, my email, I'll put it in the chat, and or you can chat to me. I'll put my phone number in there too. A lot of uncertainty, unfortunately, right now. And I'm happy to take questions too.
Well, thank you, Senator Van Dynen, and please convey our appreciation to Pryor Gibson for his leadership there at DES. I know they're under a lot of strain. A lot of people are depending on unemployment, and there's a lot of claims out there. So Senator Van Dynen's email, and we can share that. You can access all the contact information for our members of our General Assembly at ncledge.net, ncleg.net. But it'd be Terry.VanDyne, I think, at ncledge.net. And it's generally the first name dot last name at ncledge.net. So thank you, Senator Van Dynen, for that. I'd now like to turn it over to Representative John Ager. Representative Ager, thank you for joining us. I think maybe Dan Gerlach and my wife are out at Hickory Nut Gap looking at the background. So we will try to make sure we unmute you. Representative Ager.
Here we go. Is that it?
Yes, sir. You're ready to go. Thank you, Representative Ager, for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for making sure I got on here. And again, Chris and Terry did a great job of giving some summaries. Regarding some of the CARES Act money, we've appropriated $300 million for transportation, but it's not within the realm of the current CARES Act. So that's one of the areas we're hoping the federal government will allow us to use that money. As many of you know, the Department of Transportation is really, it's running on fumes. And we did appropriate some money to get them above their limits, but We most of all here in Asheville want to make sure we keep our connector project on track, and that worries me. As many of you know, the much reduced lack of travel is going to have a big impact on the gas tax revenues as well. So that's an area we really need to keep an eye on. Unemployment insurance has been discussed. It's the process has been a nightmare. We just got overwhelmed, and we found it hard to even train up people to manage all the phone calls. I know all of the legislators have been trying to help constituents get through to the system. They have gotten a lot of money out there, but it's been very painful and slow and frustrating for constituents. So I apologize for that. And I will add that under current rules, the $600, I believe, ends at the end of this month. And I'm worried about the effects that will have on paying rent and utilities and just keeping your lives going. We hope that another federal bill might extend some help there. I had hoped that we could beef up our own state unemployment insurance program. We have one of the least generous in the country. We weren't able to get that done. Finally, Terry mentioned some about the schools. And really, as far as getting our economy going again, one of the key pieces is being able to open up schools. And as she said, and it was a surprise to me as well, many, many parents are frightened about sending their kids to school. And it's a bigger percentage than I expected. Also, the homeschool website is kind of crashed because so many people are investigating that as an option. But it's I don't envy the governor trying to come up with the parameters for how we can open up schools. It's going to take some money to buy all the equipment they're going to need. I know the teachers are worried. I guess we know that the students, especially young students, don't carry the coronavirus strongly, or even they seem to be more immune to it. But older kids and teachers do, and it's just a lot to worry about and a lot of expense to open up the schools in a safe way. So those are the challenges. So appreciate the chance to speak to you all.
Thank you so much, Representative Vega. We appreciate you taking your time to join us and your service for our region. I'll turn it now over to Representative Jake Johnson. Representative Johnson, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having us, Nathan. And, you know, it's always tough to come before a group and us lay out all the challenges we have. But there are a significant amount of things we're facing right now. And, you know, some of the big numbers we're looking at, and obviously at this point, the reason we have to come back in September is we're just looking at projections at this point. With moving taxes back, we really won't know hard numbers, what we've got to work with, until much later in the year than we ever have. And that's a challenge in itself, is trying to kind of come up with these numbers, not really knowing what it's going to be. I do know it's not going to be good. The revenues downfall that we're looking at, the last projections we got, if there hadn't been any updated numbers, they're looking to be around $5 billion. In a $25 billion budget, that is a significant chunk of money that's going to be missing. So there's going to be tough decisions to be made. And, you know, my fear is, we look at federal money coming in, which is great, and we need it here. But at some point, that's still adding on to our national debt, and it's still money that has to be paid back at some point. And, you know, even when our economy gets going, you know, the flame of our economy, it's a wet blanket when you throw this huge national debt with interest on top of it. So, you know, these are things long term we have to think about, that it's a balancing act. We have to weigh public safety and vulnerable populations with opening back up at some point, getting revenue back flowing in, because we can't just keep borrowing that money from the federal government. And I just think we have to be really strategic how we do that. And maybe going forward, we can go back and look at some of these ideas that were proposed in the beginning, such as regional strategies as opposed to statewide orders and things like that. And, you know, obviously everything comes with its positives and its negatives, but we're going to have to look at some strategy going forward on how we can get these revenues back coming in. You know, one of the things that, and this is me speaking on my behalf, not, you know, the General Assembly as a whole, but I think I've reached out to our federal delegation and said, you know, North Carolina's had to make some tough decisions the last 10 years to get in the good financial state we were in going into this crisis. The last thing I want to see is the feds reach an agreement that would put us in a position to where our taxpayers are having to, and I don't want to use the term bail out, but pay down deficits and debts that were ran by other states prior to the COVID crisis. So some states were not near as a good financial position as we were in. They didn't have as much in reserve for the unemployment insurance. They didn't have enough in reserve for just their general fund. And the last thing I want to see is a North Carolina taxpayer be asked to pay down a debt of a state who was running a huge deficit and long-term debt prior to COVID. So I really, you know, we need the funds now. We are going to need them, especially as we start looking at hard numbers in the budget. I don't want that to come at the expense of us paying down the debt of another state, because that in long-term really weighs on our economic development here, if it affects our taxes. Another thing I would just kind of, you know, right now we haven't seen the housing market take as big of a hit as some would have anticipated. You know, just being in real estate myself, I kind of see that, you know, things aren't actually as downward turning as some people would have expected by now. I think we really need to keep an eye on that long term. I think John, or Representative Ager may have mentioned that, you know, some of that money does run out. We're going to have to make some adjustments to either extend that or figure something out. But, you know, a gap in people's work history, a lot of times will play an effect on whether they're able to get mortgages and things like that. So, you know, we may be seeing a lag in this housing market effect. So I think those are things we need to keep an eye on. Those in the mortgage industry, those in the construction industry, it really touches a lot of different sectors, and we need to keep an eye on that going forward and make sure we're, you know, being agile and adjusting to how we need to respond to make sure we don't have residual collapses on top of, you know, some of this economic downturn. But I'll be happy to stand for any questions too, or anybody can send me anything in the chat box. I'll be happy to answer it.
Thank you so much, Representative Johnson. I don't think Representative Turner and Representative McGrady have been able to join us. They may be joining us from a number I do not recognize, so we may try to unmute those numbers and to make sure they're not with us. But one question for, and we'll make sure we unmute Senator Van Dyne, Representative Ager, and Representative Johnson so y'all all can respond. What are things that our local governments, Land of Sky Regional Council, can do to support you and your service to help you provide the information you need and to be a support of you as you try to make these decisions going forward about the needs of the state?
Sorry, Nathan, go ahead.
You go ahead. I was trying to think of a good answer.
Well, you can say you agree with me if that's the case. our offices want to be a resource to people. As Representative Ager mentioned before, we're doing all we can in the way of constituent services. Sometimes when things are at a little bit of a gridlock or really just we're waiting on restrictions to be freed up with funds, or we're waiting on these numbers to come in. It does give us a chance to put a huge focus on constituent services. And, I've really tried to take this as an opportunity to personally follow up with a lot of these cases. And my LA, she's been absolutely great, asked to do things she's probably not had to do in the past in the way of reaching out to departments and just trying to connect people where they need to go. And we understand how tedious some of these forms are, and then if you've got one thing wrong on it, it's going to kick back or say pending on your end. And sometimes the biggest challenge for us is being able to track down those forms, you know, figure out what the holdup is and get them processed. And that's really during this time some of the biggest impact we can make on people's lives is, you know, they're depending on this funding. If we can speed the process up by a couple of weeks or expedite their claim, that's huge. And I know I've worked with a lot of people in my district and some outside of the district that says we have nowhere else to turn. We really don't know what to do. And it's been great to be able to help them in any way we can. So constituent services are huge. They just have to know where to go. And I know sometimes it's federal issues that we have to pass along. We've got a lot of inquiries about stimulus checks, which is through the federal treasury, that we're having to connect them with liaisons there and things. But I would say, if you know someone in each of our districts, and if you can help connect them where the right place to go is, we would be happy to help them get these claims processed, or at least figure out what the holdup is on their claim. They just have to know where to go to get in touch with us.
I completely agree with Jake Johnson. Nathan? Am I coming through now? Whoa.
You are. We can hear you. Go ahead, Representative Ager.
Yeah, thank you. I think one of the things you can do to help us, you know, our economic, the economics in our region are not like the economics in other regions. And we often in Raleigh tend to look at things statewide. So one thing you can help us with is to how we can keep in touch with what bills are being proposed and help us tailor them to the real needs of our businesses in Western North Carolina. That would be, I don't know how to, that's kind of general, but often we don't really think of our region by itself. And we do have a lot of small businesses. We have some agriculture here that's needs help as well.
Senator Van Dyne, I don't know if you're still on the call. Can we unmute her? She may not be able. I don't think Representative McGrady or Turner joined us. If they are, they're joining us from a number that I don't recognize, and I apologize to them if they're on this call. We set up our calls so participants cannot unmute themselves from your end as a security measure, because early on in this process we were Zoom bombed and that was not pleasant. So we're trying to avoid that happening again. So that does make handling the calls a little more difficult. But we appreciate Senator Van Dyne, Representative Johnson, and Representative Ager for joining us today. Again, thanks to Drew Christie with the Governor's Office for joining us as well and always giving us an update. We will continue to hold these calls each week. So the next call will be next Thursday. I'll try to get some of our local government leaders to share on that call, and we'll try to provide information that hopefully is relevant and useful to you. So that's the purpose of these calls, is that we understand at this time a lot of things are changing very quickly, and it's a platform to be able to share information to help our region better respond to this public health and economic crisis. So again, thank you for joining us. Thank you for everything that you all do for our region. We hope you stay safe and stay well. And if there's anything we can do for you, Land of Sky Regional Council, certainly please reach out to us. My email is nathan@landofsky.org. And you can go to our website and find our staff contact information if you would like to do that. But thank you so much again for joining us today. And we hope everyone has a wonderful day. Again, stay safe, stay well, and join us next Thursday at 1 o'clock as we have another of these weekly calls. Thank you.